Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You know, it's a bit like being rude to the Queen Mother, taking over Williams and saying, we've got to change stuff. That's how tough a job it is.
So he's basically saying, yeah, thanks so much, all you coding geniuses. That's not a business.
Actually, no one wanted them, particularly as they were very extortionate.
Hello. And welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 58, which, if I check my menu, is beef with green pepper. There you go. All good. So,
and oyster sauce.
This week, we are going to begin with a little bit of schadenfreude. This group of learned gentlemen all agreed that the idea of taking beautiful sports cars and electrifying them might not have legs. And last week we heard that Lunaz, this company that was doing that, has to be said to a high quality, ceased operating. So we're not here to gloat, but we're here to sort of maturely pick over the bones and work out why it didn't happen. Because one man who should have been buying their cars is wearing a brown corduroy cap. And it's called Neil Clifford. You should have been absolute target for this. You should have had two Lunazes in your shed right now. But you haven't got three fists of fuck all of one, have you?
Well, why? Why should I be?
Yeah,
because he's a gentleman who spends money on cars. No, you're not. You should have been. They should have persuaded you to buy one of their cars, and they didn't.
Well, it's obviously bad news. Sorry, I'm eating my Brad Flakes. It's obviously bad news if any business is in trouble or people lose their jobs and all that. So, and any company that's employed in automotive, we support, even if they are electric things, I suppose, because it's better than other electric things. But I suppose that it was a brilliant idea that no one wanted. Right?
Well, five.
The rumours is five.
They built five cars, including the one at the Beckham wedding.
Yep. That's the rumour. And I think three of them were paid for and two of them weren't, sort of thing. Yeah. But, I mean, if you read all, and I'm sure Mr. Cooper's done more research on it than me, if you read all the gump about administration and restructuring, they've got a big order book, in theory, is what it actually says for the cars, but not for the lorries, because they were doing lorries as well and dumper trucks and recycling conversions and lots of other stuff, because there were two companies. Again, Mr. Cooper, I'm sure, has done more research than me. So there were two companies. I read the words that the car bit, there was an order book. But frankly, who would want one, really? That's the problem, isn't it? Because you don't want to ruin a gorgeous Bentley or a gorgeous Porsche or gorgeous whatever, Pagoda, by putting an electric thing in it, and probably you have to go and do 100,000 miles to make it ecologically friendly or whatever those maths are. So, brilliant idea. loads of people actually 5 or 10 years ago, all my sort of cleverer people saying to me, oh, Neil, wouldn't it be wonderful to, we should start a company and make classic cars electric because there's going to be loads of people that want them. Actually, no one wanted them, particularly as they were very extortionately expensive.
And shit.
And as a small side point, shit. Yes.
Yeah, can I, because I'm the non-business person here.
No, you're not. Chris is the other, don't you take
that mantle away from
you
me.
You can fight for that one.
I've lost more money than you. There's no doubt about that. Cooper can tell you that.
So just a very lateral point, but absolutely picking up from what Neil said. I don't know if you've seen, there's a Steve Jobs Q&A. It's quite famous. It's been posted on YouTube. And I mean, it would be in the 90s, I guess. And maybe even the late 80s. But he's come back to Apple. He's lost $1 billion in the previous year. And a fantastically articulate man gets up and he asks a question. And he just basically says, what are you doing losing $1 billion? Why are you doing it? And then he starts talking about coding. And he goes into this big conversation about coding and open source coding. And this is, you know, how can we have missed this out at Apple? And Jobs, and I am answering your point, Neil, Jobs sort of leans back and, you know, there's a big wince. The audience kind of go, how can you say that to Steve Jobs? And Steve Jobs is very calm. He says, actually, the guy's right. I shouldn't have lost $1 billion. I'm paraphrasing here. And then he says what Neil said. He just says, do you know what? I'm sitting in this room and there was a reverse camera angle. You could see all these techie types, loads of them, theoretically knew every single thing about coding and computers. And he said, do you know what? I'm not building a business so that I can tell the world how brilliant you all are and how brilliant I am. I'm building a business to go and find my customers. I'm going to go and find my customers. I'm going to find out what they want. And when I find out what the customers want, and I know we can deliver it brilliantly, it's your job and my job to deliver that. And it just cuts through this. And he's basically saying, yeah, thanks so much, all you coding geniuses. That's not a business. And it really does make me think about what you've just said, Neil, about this. You know, a bunch of guys sit down and go, there's this great thing, it's called upcycling. Oh, what's that? You take a product, you recycle it, you make it even better. And how do you do that? Well, you put an electric engine in it. That's how you do it. You keep the body, you do all these other bits and pieces, and everyone's going to want one.
I thought about this, but David, who founded Lunaz, is a lovely guy, and he's a car guy, and he's a young entrepreneur, and I respect him for what he's done because he's gone and raised a load of money, and you know that's bloody hard work. However, as an outsider, it just all felt wrong. You know, they were trying to ultimately justify the IP of this electric conversion, so they built effectively a platform. We talked about it in the first ever podcast Collecting Cars did, a skateboard to put a product on. So and ultimately they wanted to convert old commercial vehicles to be electrified rather than having to go and order a brand new garbage disposal unit as
rubbish truck, Edward, in this country.
A garbage truck. And
rubbish truck. Garbage.
What felt very wrong, and I'll say this because you know there's no point here. We should say what we think, but they went straight into raising money, massive buildings, fancy offices. He just got it all fucking wrong.
Yeah, Silverstone.
Yeah, they just got it all fucking wrong. They spent OPM, other people's money, and what they, you know, if there was a job to build to convert old Bentleys into electric things, you do it in a shed in Devon. And if someone comes along and says I'm going to give you £500,000 because I want you to restore the whole thing ground up, then brilliant, do that. But they got so ahead of themselves and they've been caught out. You know, we're in a different world now. There's high interest rates, people want return on their monies. Like, you just got caught out, and it's a shame. and that's what it is.
It is. You're right. It is, and I think there were clearly two parts of the business. One was the first part was quite a good idea, which was converting old or decrepit commercial vehicles with an electric platform. That's quite a smart idea. I think they only really had an order for a couple of those. I read something today that Buckinghamshire County Council had ordered one and they still hadn't got it, and that somebody else might have ordered half a dozen. So that's not a...
Just as someone who lives in the West Country, I never know where Buckinghamshire is. Does it exist?
It does exist. You know where Buckingham is, sort of southeast of Silverstone?
Right.
It starts from there and goes, yeah. It's the posh part of the bit to the northwest of London, which is where Neil...
You've answered that. I've digressed you. Carry on.
It's okay.
It's out that window.
Yeah, it is. You see, where Neil lives, it's posh Buckinghamshire.
Put your Horner away.
I've seen that finger before.
Put that.
That's been in the sun, that finger.
Put your Horner away. We don't want to see that. That little amphibian Horner. Right, carry on.
So, but the other part of it was a bullshit idea. I'm sorry, it's bullshit. It is a bullshit eco-fraud proposition, pandering to celebrities.
EIS investments, probably so they government can grants
put
for electric.
Pictures on Instagram of, oh, look, I've got an eco-friendly car. It's my lovely Bentley. And David Beckham clearly bought one. But it's a fraud. It's no one believes it.
I'm not sure he bought one.
Even worse.
He bought one because he invested in the company.
Yeah. They probably paid an awful lot for it.
Do you think their flagship model was the Goop? That's what I thought.
Well, I looked at their website today. I mean, as Neil said, he's absolutely right. And I thought about this today. He said that there's no, any business going, anybody who tries is worth it, gets our support.
Good respect, yep. Yeah.
Anybody who tries to break the mold and do something different definitely gets our respect. If we'd been asked, we'd have said, please, God, don't do that idea. It's wrong at every level. And I saw one of the things in one of the press releases I saw today was, there was sort of a suggestion, well, of course, when Sunak changed the date of...
Yeah, they blame Rishi.
I mean, actually, it's not quite true. Because as we said before, the 2030 deadline previously was 100% EV new car sales. Even under Sunak's pushing it out, it's 80%. It's virtually different. And the suggestion that, of course, it's delayed the movement of fleets to EV. Well, fleets, i.e. company cars, are almost virtually 100% EV now. Why? Because there's a huge tax advantage. So if you have a company car or a salary sacrifice car, if you don't have a company car scheme, you're getting an EV. Go and ask any of the leasing companies in the UK.
I always get these mots juste. Salary sacrifice car, what's that?
So salary sacrifice is a tax instrument which allows you to sacrifice some of your salary at source on a tax advantageous basis.
What's a salary?
It's the salary. It's a green vegetable.
You remember we talked earlier about whether Manish and Monkey were fighting over the wooden spoon? I don't think it's really fine. And actually, Manish, your speech earlier was very, very articulate in business.
It was, I'd say it was almost a keynote. Now, look, I want to add one thing here.
Okay.
And I agree. I started off by being impish. I don't like it when people lose jobs. And I feel for those involved. I agree with Edward, though, that sometimes if you overreach yourself, you've got to take the blows that come afterwards and the criticism that might follow. The thing that I found amazing about this Lunaz situation was that, no, let's face it, no one outside of these four internet walls had heard of the bloody thing until the Beckham wedding. The exposure that the Beckham brand can give something is amazing. And then at the time, I remember a number of people that said to me, oh, have you seen that electric E-Type that is amazing and was at the Beckham wedding? It was one of those strange moments where people would connect with me about people that would never talk about cars, had a conversation point about cars. You must get that as well. And I hate it when that happens. What I wanted to say was, oh, leave me alone. It's shite. I'm not interested. And also, if I was that child, I'd be thinking, I've had my wedding ruined by a fucking milk float that looks like an E-Type. Can I have a proper one next time? But I didn't say that to many of them. But on the one hand, it reminds me of the power that these brands like Beckham have. They can bring something, they can surface something that's normally in the geek zone into the normal world, which is incredibly powerful. But this is a timely reminder that Some of it is snake oil. That car and that business had so much exposure with that moment, and it still wasn't enough to persuade people that it was a business worthwhile supporting.
Was that the Harry and Meghan wedding car as well?
Did they have an E-Type?
I remember the Harry and Meghan wedding and the electric E-Type. I don't remember the Beckham one, but it's the same. It's the same effect.
It's just terrible timing, isn't it? Because EV, yes, we've had it forced down us for the last 8 or 10 years, and now you look at Tesla, Rivian, Lucid, except all of their shares are a fraction of what they IPO'd at, etc. You would struggle to keep an investor engaged to keep supporting it.
Yeah,
it doesn't read to me that in any way that it's over. It reads to me that it's a restructuring of debt.
Yeah. Is it a pre-pack? I'm demonstrating
No, what I was going to ask was just a sort of an engineering question, because you said, Chris Cooper, that part of that business looked as if it had legs, the idea of putting an electric platform into it. But is that so much cheaper than just commissioning a new dustbin? Really?
Well, it depends what you want, isn't it? And we said when we talked about it the weekend on our little WhatsApp, it'd be interesting to see the numbers, to see how far from being above water that idea was. And there'd be a premium in there for saying, we avoided recycling an old truck. We've got an EV one, so sitting, a diesel engine running outside people's houses or schools when they're collecting the bins on a Friday, whenever it is, that's all worth something. But I suspect the volume and the numbers, and I suspect lots of people have the idea to say, we've got this idea for a skateboard, we're going to sell it to OEMs. I mean, you'd need a factory the size of China to do
that. Can I be really cynical and say that, and this is again me with my silly business hat on, surely part of this thing was going to local authorities and saying, right, you've got no money, your budgets are all gone, you've depreciated these vehicles down to nothing, so they owe you nothing. And if you come to us and have them converted, there's going to be grants. You also can claim 40% of everything back because you're actually maintaining the vehicles. I bet you it was all based around that, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. There's no secret about it. That's almost exactly what it was, yeah.
This is a business fight back, Monkey. I'm not so sure Man is sure safe.
We can go back and revisit 08, 09 if you want, Mr. Cooper.
There's a very good podcast called How They Built It in America by a guy called Guy Ross. And go and have a look at that and listen to the last two, not the last two podcasts, but the guy who started Rivian did one about 2 years ago with him. And then he also did one in December. It's good listening. It is very tough out there to become a manufacturer of vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't one of these things about 500 grand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
So you can go and buy an S3 Bentley for 80 grand or 70 grand, which frankly is depreciated from a environmental perspective. Surely the most environmental friendly cars
is an old
are
one.
really the old ones, right?
Yeah. That's why I said it's a bullshit proposition.
Can I suggest one thing? I've had enough of talking about Lunas. I'm a bit bored with it, so we're going to move we're going to move on to Formula One and a scintillating race down under that happened in the small hours of Sunday morning. I stayed up for it, and I would like to invoice Liberty Media for the time that I wasted not sleeping. No, I'm joking. There are bits of it that are interesting. I'm sure there was a massive cheer as Max went out. Be aware, it was a minor mechanical fault. It ain't going to happen again, so don't worry about that. But okay, my opening salvo, two things that I want to talk about. One, Carlos bloody Sainz. What a legend.
What a hero. Yeah.
Just embodies everything. Manages to hit a button that means he's got a thumbs up coming. I like that.
I think it happens automatically.
Does it?
If anyone can get another thumbs up, it was happening to me at work today.
Brilliant. Anyway. So everyone listening will think we've totally lost our shit. Let me go back. It's Carlos Sainz. After having his appendix removed through keyhole surgery 2 weeks earlier, comes back, wins a race. Chris Cooper's done it. Amazing. So I want to discuss Carlos Sainz versus Charles. I'm not sure the Scuderia has made the right call there. And the other bit, Ricciardo versus Tsunoda. Little Tsunoda was considered to be a bit of a joke package a few years ago, but he has decapitated two drivers in two seasons. And that's all you're supposed to do when you're a racing driver is shit on your teammate. He has done the most comprehensive job of anyone doing that. I'm going to go straight to Neil Clifford, who I can pretty much guarantee didn't watch the race.
You know, I was jet lagged because I was in New York. So actually, I was awake at 4. And in that moment, you're lying in bed. It was 3:52 on my clock. And I'm like, shall I get up? And I'm bollocks. And I went back to sleep. And then the whole drama of, because we had recorded it. So then you've got to get your son up and he can't look at Instagram because he wants to be surprised. You can't look at your WhatsApp groups because Edward's going to, tell you we won or something. So we were having a bit of a chuckle at that, weren't we? But, it was good, wasn't it? It was good. The hair won.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Ferrari would be, you would be thinking, shit, are we going to end up with two of the wrong drivers next season? You would be strategically thinking, oh, God, this is going to be embarrassing. Even though I adore Lewis, it's still a risk, isn't it, that? Mm. I want him to win. But, now Carlos is like, hey, I'm cool. I've got the hair. I'm a better driver than that other guy.
I've got seven words in my name.
Yeah, he's put himself out there, isn't he? He's going to get loads of job offers.
He's got the coolest dad by a mile.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dakar Rally winner again.
I mean, it's I just love it when these stories emerge from Formula One. To what extent, Manish, is Carlos performing the way he is because of the slight he feels at the decision that was made about him for next year?
Do you think that Spanish people are very proud? This is the question. Because my feeling is his pride has been punctured by these idiots at Ferrari. This is what I think. I shall name drop here. We were in Italy over the weekend, wrecking for the forthcoming movie, and totally by chance, Luca Montezemolo happened to be in Rome in his apartment when we arrived. And I had a quick coffee with him, and he is somewhat perplexed at the big Ferrari decision. I mean, he's perplexed by it. And no rancor or anything, but he just said, Sainz is terrific, and I can't see any really good reason for him not to be in the car next year. And he said the pole position he's got, because I met him on Edward doing this. That's a money sign, everyone. But he said that he found it sort of just an inexplicable decision. And he said, and actually what he said was, Senna, when he went after Senna, he said, the president of Ferrari has to go and get the best. That was his feeling. Whoever is running Ferrari, you have to go out there and get the best. And he said that in 1993, Senna had performed unspeakably well. And he felt in 1994, it was his job to go and get him. And if he could get him out of his Williams contract a year early, he was quite happy to do that. And he said, I would contrast that with Lewis. Lewis is 39, he'll be 40 next year. I'm sure he'll perform at a high level, but is he the best driver in Formula One? He leaves that to you to decide. And, my final point on this is, last year, Sainz showed serious racecraft when he won that one race. I've talked about his back.
Singapore. Yeah. The way he strategized that race.
Genius.
Remarkable.
Yeah. It's not a straightforward circuit. It's bloody hot. It's a two-hour race. And the guy was just pulling everybody's string, and he wins this race. And this business is about speed, but it's also about speed of thought. And I've let the wrong guy go. They've really let the wrong guy go.
So I think Carlos to see Ferrari winning, isn't it? It's good to see Ferrari winning.
Yes, I agree. Chris Cooper, what do you think?
So Carlos was the story of the race, but because the clocks didn't quite go forward, it was even earlier in the morning than it should have been. So that was slightly frustrating. So I didn't get up. And when I watched it on replay, I have to say, apart from Verstappen not winning, And I think Corinne said on one of his little tweets, why can't we persuade Max to miss one in three races? Because he'll still win the championship, but it'll make it a bit more interesting for us. So aside from Carlos being the story of the race, I think there were a couple of other stories. One was, I don't know if you saw the stuff on social media, when Logan Sargeant got benched.
Yep.
I hate making the verbs out of these adjectives. Anyway, he got benched.
You shouldn't be. That's an entirely adequate verb. It's good.
Do you? It's a bit like when at some point in the recent past, Olympian athletes start talking about meddling.
Meddling's fine. I don't have a problem with that because meddling normally means interfering. And I think that's good to take that away.
I don't know how it got us there. Anyway.
I think the best of those is shambled. He shambled into the bar. I think that just perfectly describes.
Well, that's okay. I can personally relate to that one. So I think the other stories of the weekend were, do you see that? Justice for Logie Bear. I thought it was brilliant.
Justice.
There were people holding up banners and he was having to sign them. So I thought that's the first time I think James Vowles has made a misstep.
Did you think that? I thought he got it spot on.
I thought it was wrong.
Really?
I thought it was wrong because the only reason they were in that predicament was because Albon had made the same mistake at the same corner as he did last year. And I thought that was, and it just sent a signal to the other half of the garage. And I can see from a right brain or left brain point of view, whichever Neil tells which side of the brain it is. I can see how James Vowles came up with that. But I think in the long run, I think it just immediately sorted out problems. It didn't work. Yeah. Albon didn't get any points. And it taught Albon a different lesson to the one that I think he should have been taught, which was,
that's right.
If you stack the car, there are consequences. So I thought from a number of levels, I really rate James Vowles. I really like. I think you all know I really, really like him and rate him. I think he's an immensely interesting, bright bloke who has taken on one of the toughest jobs in Formula One because, you know, it's a bit like being rude to the Queen Mother, taking over Williams and saying, we've got to change stuff. That's how tough a job it is. But I think he made a misstep. It didn't work. If it had worked, he might have got away with it, but it was a big gamble this early in the season. So I think that was the other story that I thought was really interesting. We talked about it on WhatsApp was Fernando getting a penalty for whatever he did, breaking early in front of George Russell. Monkey, you know, I've talked about this. I think it is an acceptable practice in racing on the last lap when you think I've not got to save my position for the next lap. This is it right here and now. And I've done that. I've done what Fernando's done twice in my little cottage version of motor racing.
Do you know what Stirling Moss, Mansell allegedly did this to Senna in Adelaide in 1992. Moss was commentating and someone came up to him afterwards and said, Stirling, I think Mansell brake tested Senna. And
into the last corner.
Yeah, and he basically said, if someone had done that in my day, I'd have punched him on the nose. And that's what he said. And I think he's spot on.
Yeah, but you can get away with it. So I did it twice within a week of each other. One I got away with, one I didn't. And if it works, you're fine. But I don't think it was Alonso being really, really, oh, bloody hell. I just think he misjudged it. So I can see why he was angry. But when you saw how close he was, that was out of order. So I think George was very, very magnanimous about it. When he was interviewed in the pen, he said, you know, well, it just kind of seemed to start. And I think clearly the two of them are mates. I thought it was interesting quite how magnanimous and sort of calm George was about it.
He wasn't calm when he was in the middle of the track.
Yeah, he wasn't. And then we saw the bit afterwards where he clearly was. I thought it was, I want a red flag, because if there's a red flag, we go back one lap and I keep my place. But actually, when I listened to it again, he was shit scared.
Yeah, you would
totally get it. It should have been.
As a racing driver, that's the equivalent of a rally driver going sideways into a tree.
Yeah.
My view is that in the Mickey Mouse shit we've done, you don't, when you follow at one car length, you're not dealing with it, aero and all that sort of stuff that really is unbalancing the car. The fact is, the way they follow through quick stuff, you know that if you change, you know, if you change the angle of attack of a wing by 5 degrees. You lose all the downforce, and I'm sorry, Fernando's got form with that stuff. And I don't think it was pretty, personally. I don't think it was. You know, you can argue that George was never going to get hurt, but even so, it wasn't a good look. And it wasn't a good way for the race to end. But people say, well, would you, in an MX5 race, absolutely fine. Cock about, do what you want, make the car as wide as possible, be a wanker. But when you're dealing with, you know, 1,000 kilograms of downforce at 120, 30 miles an hour, it's bonkers to start messing around with braking zones.
Did you see the Russell onboard of that? Because that's the most, it just looks like Fernando hits his brake. It just goes...
The fact is he has to commit to follow the lap the way he did the lap before.
It wasn't a
great look, really, was it?
No. And I think just my last point on it was, how much trouble are Mercedes in?
Oh God, yeah.
I don't think it's ever
Hamilton's given up.
Lewis is really not enjoying life, is he? No. And I, if you were Ferrari, you'd be thinking so. We need to whatever happens, we're going to have to re-motivate this human being before he comes here, because he's, you know, he's all, does, here's a good question for you, an existential question. Can Lewis Hamilton forget how to win?
No.
It's been such a long time.
Well, but Ferrari have got a pretty quick car, so I'm sure he's excited to get into a pretty quick car.
If you're a big winner, you don't forget how to win.
Well, I've never been one, so I couldn't tell you.
He just doesn't believe it. He's given up on believing in the car.
I'm very good at losing. I tell you what, Neil, I'll lose you some money. Give me some money, I'll lose it for you. I'm good at that.
By the way, I'm the only one.
Are restructuring and probably looking for a little investment.
I tell you what, that'd be a wise bet. I'm gonna get into the piggy bank now. Sorry, Ed, what'd you say?
I'm the only one that woke up at 3:56, by the way, so I should have spoken first, given you the summary and probably covered this all.
No, you did that on WhatsApp before we all woke up.
No. I sent that message on lap three, by the way.
I'm joking.
A couple of my very basic observations. Because Max is so dominant at the moment, you either watch the first corner and just almost hope there's an accident, which I know sounds awful, but just to like change it up a bit, or the first couple of laps, just to see if something breaks. So when he was slow and his brake exploded into the pit lane, that was clearly quite an exciting thing. And I thought, right, do I go to bed now? But I didn't. I watched the whole bloody thing because I was rooting for Ferrari. I was rooting for a new winner. I didn't want Perez to come through and have a stronger car and get there. But I think that the other thing that I thought about after it was Melbourne's just a great circuit. And are any of these modern circuits, do they live up to the old circuits, the ones that we've watched for the last 20, 30, 40 years, the Sao Paulos, the Spas, Melbourne, Silverstone? They're just brilliant circuits. On TV, the cars look more racy. It just feels like there's more overtaking. And Melbourne, which it's a circuit in a park within a city, but it's racy, and it's always felt racy. It used to be the first race of the season, and I just love it.
Can I ask someone else to expand on the Ricciardo situation? Because I don't see how that continues. De Vries got a red card, and someone, as they always do on Instagram, did a breakdown of the difference in qualifying times. If you look at the accumulator over three races, the deficit is as great now as it was between De Vries and Tsunoda. So how does this resolve itself?
Well, only one way, I fear, and Helmut's even saying, well, Tsunoda's doing really good, but I'm not sure he's doing well enough to graduate. And poor old Danny Rick, that's only going to end one way. The only question is, I mean, even for Japan, they've got one of their Japanese Academy young driver program chaps in the car for FP1, so he'll have an even harder weekend because he'll miss a big chunk of the blah blah blah. So no, I it's really weird because I thought last year he had his mojo back. He did that, you know, famous test which we saw in Drive to Survive. They went to Silverstone, and Christian's a big fan of his, clearly, and he got his mojo back and he put him back in the car, and he wasn't just a smiling, you know, blah blah blah.
He's not good enough.
A Japanese driver, have they, from the academy for So who pays that? That's clearly just, we want a Japanese driver in the car.
They've got, I forget his name, they've got a Japanese driver somewhere in their young driver program, but they got dozens of, it's a puppy farm. It's Helmut's puppy farm, and he's found a Japanese puppy in his puppy engines, farm.
You know, and it is Suzuka. So if you're going to stick someone into a P1. Can I just say one quick thing, which is I saw today that Gunther Steiner has been made the Grand Prix ambassador for Miami. His superstardom is like a supernova. He is the biggest thing in Formula One off track at the moment. He's
just jumping the shot.
In the Horny saga, I think.
Yeah. Good for him.
He did all the he did the podium interviews, didn't he, in Australia?
Couldn't watch that.
Oh, that was charismatic. Yes, tell me about the win. Yeah, very good.
Well done. I think you drove very good fucking second stint, you fuck. Well done.
Formula One clear. Clearly, from a motorsport point of view, Formula One just has the biggest magnetism. Then you just don't want to ever leave it. You know, if you were a driver, you want to be a team manager, or you want to be you'll do what Martin Brundle does now and do the pit walks. They just want to be there.
Sorry, just thinking too much about
he's well liked though, isn't he? He's well liked as a character.
He's a character. No, just Damon Hill once said something which I thought was really wonderful. I asked him, why is it that you do the commentary? You know, what is it that you're getting out of Sky? Don't you feel that you're kind of missing your family? You go around the world. He said, I've got to tell you something about being a Formula One driver. He said, it's like getting a pass to Disneyland when you're a driver. And this pass not only gives you access to Disneyland, but you can go on any ride right at the front. You can have any bit of merchandising you want. You can eat where you want. And then one day someone says to you, we need to take your pass away. And you kind of watch your pass going away. And he says, but what you could do is get a pass that still admits you to Disneyland. You can't go on the rides, but you can definitely go into the shops and you can eat a bit of food, but go to Disneyland every 2 weeks. And he said, when you've been to Disneyland with that first pass, oh, you have to take that second pass.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah.
Congratulations to Formula One. Look how we're talking about it.
Yeah. I know.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we're going to change the tempo slightly now for one of those slightly quirky ones that we rather enjoy. Posed, I think, by Mr. Cooper. If you live in the UK and you had to build a new motorway, where would it be and why? All addicts now assume adenoidal voices. Pull up your socks, put on your Birkenstocks, whatever you call them, and tell us where your new motorway would be. Neil Clifford.
Chris Manish Clifford.
That's a terrifying thought. Go on then.
Let's
do it, Neil.
the worst of both worlds. I would build it under London. You know, if this was Shanghai, if this was Singapore, if this was even Melbourne, if this was a country that was actually into its infrastructure investment, you would build the M1 wouldn't come to an end. It would go down a tunnel.
Yeah.
And you'd come out at, I don't know, Deptford or the Elephant and Castle. And then this giant underground roundabout that would be the equivalent of the North and South Circular, but underground.
Like the Faroe Islands.
Yeah, with four lanes each side. You know, you can go east, west. There's four or five turnoffs. You know, it's a mega city. It's probably, in my view, the best city in the world, but certainly, you know, New York, Tokyo, Paris, London. I mean, what else is there really? It should be a much more brilliant infrastructure.
Düsseldorf.
Yeah. But you know, we're crap at infrastructure, aren't we? We can't even bloody build HS2. We're entering it 2 miles up the road. No one's going to use it.
We've been talking about
the Elizabeth line.
Sorry.
It's good.
Her Majesty's line.
Yeah.
Her Majesty's line.
We've been talking about a third runway at Heathrow since the 60s.
Yeah.
And China builds a new airport every 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
By the way, I just had a moment there and I need to request one thing. I just heard Neil Clifford say elephant and castle. Can you say it again, please?
Elephant and castle.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's so much logic in that. I can't argue with it. Manish, where would your motorway be and why?
I would love it to start in Camden. So it's not quite at the bottom of our garden. We're in Belsize Park, about a mile north. And I would love it to go to St. Maur's. That would be like Camden to St. Maur's, because I love St. Maur's. The drive, I don't have the stamina of you guys. Normally when we go down, we stay at a hotel on the way, halfway, go and have a
swim. Nice to have a car like that.
Yeah. Well, I may do again. So there is just something about going west properly from here that I never find particularly satisfying, whether it's the M3 or it's the M4 or the bit on the M25. And then when you get to a certain point, you're not on a motorway at all. I just love the idea, because I reckon, even obeying the speed limit, you'd probably do it in 3 hours.
Which
would be amazing, to go to Cornwall from London in three and a half hours. Love it. I'd love it.
Chris Cooper.
I had two on my list. I had the M470.
Ooh. Okay.
That's
sacrilege, mate. That remains an A road.
Does that go under Bristol?
No, it's basically north-south and sort of slightly east of Mid Wales.
That's going from Cardiff through Merthyr and straight up the middle
up
of
through it. Newtown and up that way all the way up to Wrexham. Yeah.
Yes.
Simply because it's very, very hard. I mean, Wales has not been well served by motorways. There was a long, those who live in South Wales around Newport and particularly that area there, the Newport tunnel, which is just such a bottleneck. Although
I met her once.
Bottleneck. So they're not going to do it now. So it's basically 50 miles an hour. In fact, some of it is 40 miles an hour. So Wales is not well served by motorways or 20-mile-an-hour zones, Mr. Drakeford.
Right, so as ever, I asked you a simple question. We've now
a north-south motorway in Wales, but my favourite...
An area of general lecturing, can we have an answer?
So if it wasn't the M470, it would be the M303.
Oh, yes. He's bang on. Okay, right.
But it would have 4 lanes and very, very few junctions, so we could all do 100 miles an hour.
Exactly. Yeah. I would love it. What would your motorway be and why?
Right, this is quite a complicated answer, but I'll try and make it as quick
as
possible.
That's my boy.
As I said recently, I don't drive out of London very often, but a pal of mine had a car accident a week ago. Yes. So I went to visit him in Bristol Hospital yesterday. And I left Parsons Green at... Chris, you're freaking me out. I left Parsons Green at about 10:02, and I turned up at in Bristol at about 12 o'clock on the dot, was with him for a couple of hours and returned. And when I returned, I tried to up the M32, tried to get on the M4, and they had blocked the entrance. So I had to, I thought, I know the way.
Are you going down the M32 to go to Southmead Hospital? That's madness.
Anyway, I tried to get back, and the motorway was shut. And the first thought was like, fuck, the motorway's shut. This is so annoying. And then you see it shut, and then you see people, I'm not sure if I shared this photo, but they're stood on the other side of the road looking, which immediately, you know, someone's had a very unfortunate situation. So that is clearly horrible. Chris, what is wrong with you?
What is wrong with you?
What the motorways have obviously done is it's a bit like getting onto an aeroplane and being annoyed that your flight's delayed. Hang on a minute. that they've built this thing that will fly over the Atlantic Ocean to get you to New York in 7 hours, and you're annoyed that you're an hour late or something like that. So we've become so reliant on them that if you have an hour, you know, diversion to get you around from one junction to the other, you get annoyed. You wanting a motorway to make your life more simple could end up becoming very complicated, because if there's an accident on it or it needs roadworks, it's going to become a drama.
Are you going to suggest one or not?
Unbelievably philosophical. I mean, really unbelievably philosophical.
Well, a journey that used to take you 5 hours, you've now got a motorway that takes you 30 minutes. The moment it's shut, you'll be like, oh, you won't believe it. It took me 3 hours to get home because I had to do a diversion.
I thought, I anticipated one of us answering like that, but I didn't think it'd be Edward. So
anyway, first of all, that's one part of my answer. The second
Don't put that finger up.
The second part of my answer is I shared something earlier on TikTok on our WhatsApp group. And I never knew this had happened, but they built this underground road network between the Faroe Islands, which is 72 meters below the ocean floor or something like that. It is remarkable. And hopefully Chris can educate us one day on why they've actually done it. So my answer is, I just want to drive to New York. I want a motorway under the ocean from London to New York, please, because they do it in the Faroe Islands. So clearly, I'll just drive to New York. I don't need to fly. Just get in the car. How long would that take?
Quite a long time.
About a week.
Hours. Half an hour?
If you're a flat chat, it's 2 days.
Hours.
Yeah. Flat chat. You know, when the Channel Tunnel was built, my father was involved in some of the projects. We lived down in Kent at the time. And there were three projects. A railway tunnel, a road bridge, or a road tunnel. Mm. And anybody involved in engineering or civil engineering will know that cars and tunnels generally don't mix, because you can't control car drivers. They have accidents. There was that awful fire in the Mont Blanc tunnel about 20 years ago, where you get this sort of Venturi effect, this tunnel effect of all this rushing air. Just, it's awful.
That's the perfect example of what I said. You know, the Mont Blanc tunnel was shut. So now,
and of course, utter
you've
chaos.
Got to take a 13-hour diversion.
Exactly.
So what's going to happen in Biltmore with the bridge going down? And, you know, how long is that going to take?
I mean, I looked at that and you think, it'll take a long
is
time.
Is that what they've said, 10 years?
No, I said it.
Oh, you said it, yeah.
But it will be, won't it?
Also, Biden might regret saying the federal government will pay for this.
Yeah, that was quite rash.
He might. That is a rash thing to say.
Yeah.
Not when you're 99 years old.
Can you imagine the insurance brokers going, "We've got. Has anyone got that recorded?"
Yeah.
Right. So I've been slightly usurped here as usual because I'm so dignified. I let everyone go first. The way I approached this was, I thought, "What's the journey?" But more often than not, I'm thinking to myself, this should be a motorway. We're not well served here, and it is the A303. Because actually, the A11 was the 303 of Norfolk. But
that's
they've made
point.
That bigger, and they've sorted that out.
It's done.
Wales should be left alone. The A470 is a genius of a road. That should never be a motorway, because that's where you go fast on motorcycles and have a good time and stop and have bacon rolls. But the A303 is an inexcusable road for a developed country. It's a road that if you took someone that had lived in Burma and said this is our way of getting to Cornwall, they'd go fuck this.
I think it's
not good enough. There you go. That's my thoughts on
Agreed.
That. I agree with all of you who said the 303. Moving on. So there was some automotive news last week, and we do try and remain vaguely topical here. There was on the same day the announcement that Adrian Hallmark was leaving Bentley, or would be leaving Bentley by, I think, late autumn to join as Aston Martin's CEO, otherwise known as the hospital pass, that McLaren, or the Bahrainis, had effectively bought everyone out of McLaren, so they now control it. I'm not a businessman, as I've proved. I have a view on this stuff. Let's start with Chris Cooper.
So the Bentley-Aston Martin thing is interesting. So Adrian Hallmark has only been CEO of Bentley for 5 years. something like that. And he made that extraordinary statement recently when the sales went down last year. And he said, I wrote it down, he said, oh, it's because of the emotional sensitivity of buyers who didn't want to be seen to be buying a flash luxury accoutrement in troubled times. And I thought, I know what he's trying to say, but I can imagine people in VW and lots of people who buy Bentley thought, what on earth are you talking about? And he was also the man when he was at Bentley that he thought an extended wheelbase turd, otherwise known as the Bentayga EWB, was a satisfactory replacement for the Mulsanne. So in some respects, a man who's responsible for both of those outcomes and Lawrence Stroll are a marriage made in heaven. I mean, he's quite young, as recent Aston Martin CEOs go, 62. I can only imagine it's a pension top-up. It's a hospital pass. They had a refinancing, another 1.15 billion.
There's a rumor that the remuneration package is significant.
Yeah, it's a pension top-up.
Yeah,
it's a pension top-up, and it will end in tears. I mean, the cars are, you know, we all want to love the cars, and we talked about Aston Martin before. I imagine that, I mean, Adrian Hallmark was also the man who literally killed and expunged from the record anything to do with Bentley racing. So there was a Twitter, Monkey, when you and I raced that Bentley 6, 7, 8 years ago, whenever it was, there was a Twitter account run by one of our mutual friends. And when Adrian Hallmark said, we're getting out of racing, we're going EV in a few years' time, where's that plan gone? Not only did it just stop putting stuff on that Twitter account, they deleted it.
Bastard.
They deleted their own motorsport Twitter account. So I think good luck to them. They deserve each other.
Here's a question for you then, a second question. I'll put this to Neil Clifford. Is it possible to be the CEO of Aston Martin with as powerful an executive chairman as Lawrence Stroll in charge? What sort of a CEO can you be?
I think it's very hard. I mean, I'm a bit pissed off because he's obviously got my job. This Hallmark.
Lucky escape, yeah. Neil.
Yes, yeah. And I'm not on LinkedIn. Maybe I should have been, and then they might have approached me.
No, you should have put other jobs.
We all know that you've got to sort out service stations first, mate. You're doing service. Bordeaux is falling before the DB12. Right, carry on.
Exactly. No, I think it is quite difficult to be. I mean, it's a good bit of recruitment, I think, from Lawrence. He's obviously a very confident chap, I would think. You know, if you've run Bentley for 5 years, he's probably, I don't know his background, actually, but I'm sure he's an automotive.
Land Rover.
I'm sure he's I think there's probably, if your reference, Manish, on Luca, go and get the best guy you can, probably on the availability of people that would take that job, he's probably got the best man around. Maybe. Yeah.
The best one willing to do it, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's hard to do. I think you're right. It probably is $3 million a year. If I'm there 3 years, or even if I'm not, he's going to pay me off a 3-year contract. I've got guaranteed bonuses, you know, whatever. It's probably a $10 million quid signature, isn't it? So he's probably quite happy, frankly.
Yeah.
It's a great job, isn't it? It's a great job. I know, probably.
There's a couple of things from my point of view. Number one, obviously, we've been talking a lot about Bentley over the last 6 or 8 weeks since Neil ditched all the Bristols and got Bentley. So we now need to be massive Bentley supporters. But actually, we've clearly all got a deep love and admiration for Bentley. We do also for Aston Martin. But Aston Martin, it's been, up until now, and it still is, a business play, a financial play. You know, there's debt and it's complicated. And will Mercedes buy it? Will Geely own it? And maybe if Hallmark turns up there and Geely take ownership and all under the control of Mercedes, and they've got a large pot of money to grow it and turn it into what its big potential could be, then that might be a wise move.
Yes. But
coming from Bentley, where you've got all of VW's money to run that business, and going to Aston is a very, very different business. So I can imagine he's hoping there's a bigger end game here than just his salary.
I think that's right.
Because I don't think you would want to go into a manufacturer today that's struggling for cash, because I think that's a really challenging job, as we are seeing left, right, and centre.
Mm. I think that's right.
What do you think? Well, I had to read the FT about this, and there was one little fact that, I mean, none of us have mentioned, that apparently under his tenure until 2023, Bentley's profitability went up 10 times.
Yeah.
That could reflect interest rates. It could reflect lots and lots of things. But, you know, on that Luca basis, best guy possible available, you know, a guy who has got that track record. And 2023 has been, you know, it was a horrible year, you know, in terms of years. I mean, certainly in the film business, you know, we have the writer's strike, of course, and the actor's strike, but post-COVID, no one was commissioning anything at all. There was this kind of COVID binge and everything contracted. And I would imagine, you know, car sales, when interest rates suddenly double or triple, get pinched. I think he probably said something very dumb, but it may have been very true that people didn't want to buy a new Bentley when the world was suffering. Maybe that, you know, there was a truism. But the FT argued that there were plans for a management shakeup anyway, apparently, and so the guy knew he was on his way out. Amedeo Felisa, how old is he?
120,
130. Yeah. So the one is always going to be an interim appointment, and apparently he's going to stay until October anyway. Thumbs down from Edward. Did you see that?
No, I didn't mean to do that. No one knows how these things happen. Is it a facial expression?
So it does.
Felisa has actually taken over from that guy that the Scotch VHS adverts in the 80s, re-record, not fade away. That's his next job.
Poor skeleton. Oh, no, but it does make that there's a round hole, there's a round peg. And he goes, I mean, I just hope they don't pay his pension in Aston Martins. I mean, that's going to be one series. Can you imagine? Here is your pension, 25 Aston Martins. Watch that pension depreciate somewhat.
It's some turnover of CEOs, though, isn't it? I mean, it's unfair. Numerically, we know that it's not truthful, because Andy Palmer was always going to leave straight away when Lawrence arrived. Tobias is probably the first casualty. So it's really 2.5. Felisa was a stopgap. We know that. That was very much probably Luca being friendly and saying, I'll help you out and give you a man so you can find your man. I think, like all of you, I love the brand. I'll move on to McLaren. So the way I view the Bahrainis taking over a control of McLaren and saying we'll own the whole thing is to then have control over how they partner in the future. This is a business this is not about consolidating, throwing another 5 billion and making the best sports cars in the world on their own. This is them showing a bit of leg and saying, right, who's going to come in and partner with us? And on the one hand, you could view that as being sad. On the other, I think it could be quite exciting.
Because I think,
you know, Neil made this point. It's quite right. If you go to California, look how many of these things they've sold in America. The brand's got a lot of traction outside of Europe as well. They make some fantastic cars. And if they just get the right partner, it could be a Lucid, it could be whoever, I don't know. There could be exciting times ahead, I think. It could be a
story. I agree.
Yeah, I think it's right. I mean, after Ferrari and the oddity that is James Bond masquerading as Aston Martin, it's the most extraordinary brand. Given you can't, you know, the 60-year thing last year, I think made people think, that's quite a brand, isn't it? So if it tidies it up,
I think so.
Yeah, then I think
that in the last week, I don't want to get in trouble with my friends in Italy. In the last week, I've seen a 750S in the raw. It's almost a 10-year-old design now, and I've seen an 812 Competizione in the raw. I'm sorry, one of these companies is going a bit wild, and the other one I think looks great, and it's the British one that I like the look of. I'm sorry, I think that, you know, that FXX, the XX thing for the road. Not sure about it myself.
Yeah.
So I think McLaren could be poised for a bit of a surprise. I hope so as well.
Yeah. They need a 4x4.
Sadly, they do. Need to,
yeah. Basically. Yeah. That and actually, when you read those interviews, is it Michael Letters or Letters or whatever?
Yeah.
He hints at broadening the appeal of different vehicles, 4x4s, nothing's off the agenda. Because whether you like it or not, you can't survive just making one car that looks exactly the same as the one.
Particularly if you haven't got the margins and the and the add-ons and the, you know...
Conversation is around British-built sports cars, which I like, because I'm ultimately a little bit xenophobic and like the fact that we're making good cars in the UK. So, moving on.
Hold on a second. I've got one last thing to add to this, which is... You made the comment about Carlos Sainz being the wrong move for Ferrari. This is just all about business. And, you know, Ferrari building 812 competiziones. Chris and I had breakfast with a friend this morning that came back from New York last week. And Neil, I know you were in New York last week, but he just said it's just pumping with money. There's so much appetite and, you know, hunger there. And that's the market. That's where they're going to make their money. You know, China is hurting right now. You know, conservative Europe, they're not particularly interested in. So if it's 812 competiziones with numbers written on the side and Lewis Hamilton as their brand ambassador, that's where they're going. You know, if you're trying to be too protective. So maybe, you know, a pretty small McLaren 750S is just not cool enough. It needs to be more obnoxious, louder. They need big, wild characters supporting the brand. We'll all hate it, but that is where the money is, and they are chasing the money.
I completely agree. Doesn't mean I have to like it. I asked my fellow addicts to select their favourite film on YouTube. We'll put the links up for each one as a hyperlink so you can click on it. What's your favourite film and why? There's one. Don't pick seven. I'm not going to allow that. It's one. This thing's already gone on for over an hour. This is a long one. I'm on my second whiskey. I'll get rowdy if I get onto my third. So we need to get this. We need to get this fucker tied up soon. So Neil Clifford, what's your film and why?
Right. Well, this book is my favourite book.
Yes.
Okay.
It's wonderful. The story about the bloody missile out of Northern Africa.
Yeah. So this book is written by a guy called Brian Sewell. Now, if you put into YouTube sled driver Brian Sewell, he spends an hour and 10 minutes and 57 seconds at a university telling the story about what it's like to be an SR-71 Blackbird pilot and all the shit that he went through. And he's just an incredible, incredible guy. And I reckon I've watched it 10 times. If I only had YouTube, one thing to watch on a desert island, it would be that. And I'd recommend it to everyone. It's amazing.
Manish Pandey.
Just totally on piece for me. There's a 23-minute film about the creation and love of the Ferrari 456. It's it's beautiful.
Is that the one where Benuzzi blows the engine up and you see the bonnet go puff?
No.
Okay.
No. With the really, sticky switches and the trunk and leather.
It's got lots and lots of Camardella in it. It's got lots and lots of sketches of the early car. It's got lots and lots of conversation about the engine and detuning it. And then it has an architect who bought it, and it has a doctor who bought it. And it ends with all of these beautiful Pozzi Blue 456s driving around Bologna looking really rather beautiful. And I think I could just watch those 23 minutes over and over and over and over again.
That's why we love these. Chris Cooper, what's your video and why?
So it's very tempting, Monkey, to say one of yours.
No.
And it's very tempting to say the Holy Trinity thing. But I want to watch the next thing you're doing, and I'd want to watch something the next thing you do. So given that wouldn't be available on our desert island. And I've mentioned this one before, and Boys and I had a long chat about this. It's a slightly old one because it sort of hasn't quite got a happy ending, but it is about, it's somebody's journey. It's the Michael Fassbender Road to Le Mans series.
Yeah. You love that, really, don't you? Absolutely really, love that, don't you?
It's really, really extraordinary intimacy into a man who's, we only see in a completely different guise in whatever character he's playing, and it's completely raw. And he, in the end, he has, everyone's seen it, I'm not breaking any, you all seen the results. In the end, he has two goes at the Le Mans 24 hours, and in both of them, he shunts the car. In the second one, which was last year, he did at least break his own sort of jinx and his own sort of, his own barrier of, actually, can I be here? Should I be here? Can I do this?
That's the key thing. Should I be here?
Should I be here? And I think he's not, you know, he's an actor, but he's not acting. And in fact, in some respects, I was really surprised by his own and how explicit it was in his anxieties. So you take it from when he's doing track days in a GT3 car 4 or 5 years before, watch the whole thing. It must be about 4 hours, 5 hours, it must be more than that. It might be 10 hours of TV. But it's such a lovely story. It's so well told. It places the brand that we probably love the most. This is first world problems, Porsche, in such a different light with the different people and what it means to so many people. And it's just lovely. So I would take the consolidated works of Michael Fassbender's Road to Le Mans. I highly recommend it.
Ed would love it.
Right. Although he's pissed me off this afternoon about half an hour before we got on this podcast, Richard Tuttle built a 911 rally car for our very creative friend, Philip, who also owns the 911K and seems to be able to master the specification of a resto mod or whatever you want to call it, and produced by the very talented boys at Petroleum and delivered by Ted and Type 7. But the shakedown, the music's brilliant, the car's brilliant, good. Richard's driving it in the best way that Richard
drives cars. That is a good one. Yep.
And it just makes you think, I want to be in a muddy field with a 911.
And
that delivers for me every time. Happy to watch it on repeat.
Good call.
Yeah. And Richard, you did piss me off.
We've resolved. keep that. You've got to keep stuff in private, Edward. I've got such a long list here. I love YouTube. I don't know where to begin. Do you go Climb Dance? Do you go...
Only allowed one.
You go Patrick Depailler with the camera in the wet at Montreal. Fucking unbelievable. But there is one video, above all others, that's now got the commentary it deserves. And that is 2001, Colin McRae, St. Gwynno stage. It's the best single piece of driving you'll ever see in a motor car. Nothing in Formula One will ever come close to it. It's the best on board you'll ever see.
Yeah.
You're seeing a man at the top of his game with skills that surpass any other human being I've ever seen in a car. But the best thing is, the last thing I did before the lockdown was to do a podcast with Nicky Grist, which I pressed the record button hoping it'd be about an hour, and Nicky spoke for 3 hours because Nick is brilliant like that. He's a raconteur beyond all others. And at the end of it, I said to him for a joke, can we watch the onboard? He knows it's my favourite onboard. I said, can we watch the onboard, St. Gwynno? And you talk over it, because it'd be like almost like a fetish moment for me. And he went, of course. So I've got this personal recording, but I never published it. But he's done his own, and it's on YouTube. We'll put the link up now. So it's
that's really cool.
And he shows the notes. He's kept the notes. So the pace notes are coming up on the left as you watch the film. And it is... It's mind-boggling what Colin McRae could do. He was about 40 horsepower down. He won the stage. I've never seen a piece of driving like it, and I probably watch it once a month just to remind myself how utterly average I am at everything. This is a man with superhuman skills. It's remarkable.
I haven't seen it. I'm going to watch it tonight. Yes,
it's the way that you think the film is being slowly speeded up as it unwinds, and it's not. He's just cranking it up and cranking it up and cranking it up. And you think, this can't... And he just...
I've never seen a piece of footage like it. It's the best piece of... It makes everything else look average.
Out of body.
And at the end of it, you've got Nick quietly going, yeah, he starts to really go for it now. And you're thinking, what now?
Yeah.
So please go and watch it. And we'll do another one of these, because I think we should surface this stuff.
Yeah, it's a really good idea.
Part of this podcast is creating heroes. So I love all those. We're going to move on now to our two-car garage, which doesn't have a lengthy description. As far as, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris Cooper, it was really 10 grand for a couple of cars for the summer, wasn't it?
Yes, 10 grand. It's a this weekend, clocks go forward. Yep. So summer fun, summer evenings, two cars just for you, no other restrictions other than they've both got a sum to £10,000.
For a change, I'm going first, because I found a couple of little honeys here. I think the question I've never asked is, what's the most surprising car you ever road tested when you were young? And the most surprising car I ever road tested was a really strange little Mercedes called an SLK32AMG.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They put a C32AMG engine in an SLK, and the chassis would sort of bend itself in half. But it was like a stabbed rat. It was so fast. It had the great, that lovely, almost Bruno Stacco styling of that SLK, and it had the folding roof that worked. There's one for sale for $7,000 at the moment on Auto Trader. Almost, it's black, almost tempted to buy it after this. Fantastic. I'd augment that with, wait for it, a first generation 120D coupe, and I'd have it chipped up. That's an easy 180 horsepower. I love those little ones.
Yeah, nice.
You put a little diff in them. They are little Yobbo cars. Yeah. I'm a little Yobbo at heart. SLK 120D. Ed would love it. What's your cars?
Kind of ignored the budget, but not wildly. Not wildly. Because Chris started with lightweight. That was your original description, wasn't it? Lightweight.
I might have done that, yeah. I might have.
And so I can't quite get this within the budget, but just a simple Lotus Elise Series 1. A little bit more. But if you buy the one that I crashed at Castle Combe as a demonstrator, that's probably under 10 grand. And then something popped up in our inbound inquiries this week, and it made me smile, which was a two owner from New Z3 2.8. And in the same way that you just said, that goes like a stab rat. You know, that engine was a great engine. You know, and the Z3 chassis wasn't brilliant, but that was a very quick car.
Yeah.
Also, a Bond car.
It was a
That was the 1.9, wasn't it?
I think it might have been.
Why do you have to be such a pedant, Cooper?
You need two exhaust tips. You need a six-cylinder, two exhaust tips.
Yeah, I had that Z3 2.8 minus as well.
Yeah. Chris Cooper.
I found a 645 convertible for £2,000. There were some aspects of the description that slightly put me off. It said, one of the bits of the description said, it was in very good condition until it was vandalized.
Yes.
And then it said, missing the iDrive and the radio. I thought, well, those are all built-in units in a 645. And he looks at the pictures, and it looked like it'd been underwater for about 10 minutes.
Manage, can you prescribe him an ointment for this?
And he said, and the advert then finished by saying, it hasn't run since 2020, no MOT, it needs a tow. So I didn't go for that. But I'll tell you what, I've completely won this. I'll tell you why. Who regrets not thinking about an MR2 Roadster, the little baby one, the little small one, mid-engined?
I don't think we do.
Not me.
No regrets.
Such a fun car. It's such a lovely little thing.
They are, but they're so crashable. I mean,
Not all of us end up in the scenery. Oh, hang on, no, I do that. You're right, I do that. There's a mate of mine down in Cornwall has got one, Gwaine.
They are great. It's a very good shout. It's a very nicely
balanced. Summer evenings, so small. You can go anywhere. You can have fun in the country because they're so small. And for a bit of sensibleness, the other sort of three and a half grand I have left. It's very hard to walk past an E46 318.
Yeah.
Just think manual 346, clear glass. Yeah.
Four or two door.
Oh, four door. Definitely.
Four door.
Neil Clifford, what are your two cars?
I bought a lovely car last week of a guy called Christian, and it's good to promote other people, isn't it? Heel and Toe Cars Limited.
I've
seen his thing on the Instagram. Yes.
They got some young lovely lad. Stuff.
He gets every single car that goes on that website I want to buy.
Yeah, basically. I know. I've got the same.
Yeah, and I bought the navy blue L322 Range Rover with the blue leather. Hasn't arrived yet. I hope it's good. It's coming on Friday. So I went on his website, and all his cars are $5,000. I mean, they're sort of $3,000 lower than they should be. So I was going to go the Z3 because he's got one of those, but it's a 2 litre. So I've gone Z4 3 litre manual.
Yeah.
$4,500.
Wow. They still look, and the rear of those are great looking cars.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the prettier car than the Z3 really, because it's just, you know, it looks a bit
four
more
and
modern.
$4,500
manual. Wow, and then he's got a 322, another one. lovely Range Rover. They're the best looking Range Rovers, I think. $4,500. So I've got two cars, lovely things, and I've got a grand left for when they break down.
Result.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
And how does your £10,000 get spent?
MX-5 Roadster from 2007. Yeah, 77,000 miles. It's a gorgeous looking thing, silver, black. And I don't think that'll break down. That's a bit of summer fun. And I thought, for those nights at Scott's on a warm day outside with the torches and the doorman, there was a Rolls-Royce Silver Spirit going for 4,000.
Oh, yes.
One of the addicts has taken the plunge. I love it.
Oh, good. It's just great. You just need to hire a chauffeur for the night to pull it off.
Stella Artois and AC/DC only allowed. That's the way it is.
I think we know a chauffeur.
We do.
Yeah. He's a bit over the limit at the moment.
Now, a bit of music to end this. A bit of music. So,
we're doing music. You didn't warn us.
Oh, we always do music, Edward.
We've only done it 57 times.
I'm Chris sorted.
Chris Cooper, what are you going to have?
Well, I thought something by Nickelback. No, I'm only kidding. can't believe we haven't chosen this. And if we have chosen it, I don't care, because I love it. And I heard it this week, and I saw him being interviewed somewhere. It's Gary Numan, Cars.
Oh, good.
Yes.
It's such a lovely, lovely, beautiful song. And the video, the original video, watch that on YouTube as well. Gary Numan, Cars.
He's got a great hairpiece.
Is he?
Yeah.
Do I need to get my my leaf blower out?
Yeah. No, but he's cool. He's cool. He's cool, Gary Numan.
Neil Clifford.
I can't believe you let him buy that hat from Salvino. Did they have anything else?
It's the best. Neil loves this hat. It's a good hat, isn't it?
I'm jealous of that hat. Yeah, I'm jealous of that hat.
Neil Clifford.
I've been listening to the Joshua Tree. What an album.
Oh.
I mean... Yeah. Oh, you know, it's an incredible, every single song you think, oh my God, it's got better. So I've got it in front of me and I could choose any of them. I'm going to choose One Tree Hill.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Manish?
I don't know if we've picked this before. It's been 57 episodes, but it's Windmill to Mind, Noel Harrison from Thomas Crown Affair.
Oh, Yellow Glider.
He's gliding and she's looking and he does a loop. And he's just looking cool. He's just doing this.
Yeah,
and
one of my favourite films.
He drives up to him and...
Amazing.
By the way, it's about obsessive love. That's what the song is about. It's about being so obsessed with someone, you try to expunge them, but back they come.
Yeah. Is this a Christian Horner corner again? Sorry.
Edward Lovett, you've had 2 minutes to choose a song.
I've got one, and I was listening to all weekend, and I'm pleased to say I've got Fred again. And this one is Angie, I've Been Lost. You're going to like it. Oh, look, the thumb came up again.
That's amazing.
How does it do it?
No, but it came up with a finger. It was like a...
I just don't know how to do it.
How does Zoom make a thumb come up?
Sorry, Edward, I lost that. What was the song again?
It's called Angie, I've Been Lost Again by Fred Again. And it's brilliant. He's like exploding right now. The world just loves him.
Okay, great. So I always try and be a bit sort of cute and kind, but really I do quite like angry music in the car. Queens of Stone Age is my favourite band in the car, alongside ZZ Top and their rough early stuff. Little Sister from Lullabies to Paralyze. What a tune that is. Put that on. Turn it loud. And I tell you what, you will be driving like a penis all day. It's a great thing.
Great. With your rave hat on.
Yes. That was episode 58, otherwise known as Beef and Green Pepper. It's been an absolute pleasure. Chris Cooper's now got a Space Invader logo.
He did have a Space Invader.
This is going to keep me amused all night. I'm that sad.
Those that can't see it, we're experimenting with our emoji logos. Thank you, Edward Lovett, Manish Pandey, Neil Clifford. I'm off to have another whiskey. Good night.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.